In the 1997 movie Liar Liar, actor Jim Carrey plays a lawyer named Fletcher Reed. He's got a problem, a character flaw. He's a liar. He even lies about why he didn't show up for his own son's birthday party. That fib was just too much for his son, who makes a wish. He wishes his dad would have to go one whole day telling the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Not a single lie, either by commission or by omission. In Fletcher Reed's typical haste in life, he drives through town violating traffic rules galore. Soon, he's pulled over and an officer asks him a question. And because of his son's wish, Fletcher Reed has to answer truthfully.
You know why I pulled you over?
Depends on how long you were following me.
Why don't we just take it from the top?
Here goes. I sped. I followed too closely. I ran a stop sign. I almost hit a Chevy. I sped some more. I failed to yield at a crosswalk. I changed lanes in the intersection. I changed lanes without signaling while running a red light and speeding!
Is that all?
No.
I have unpaid parking tickets.
Traffic stops happen a lot in this country. Over 19 million times in 2015. That's the last year of statistics available from the Department of Justice. It's during traffic stops that most people encounter the police. About half of those stops result in a ticket. The majority of people who are stopped report that, all things considered, they're treated fairly. But Charles Glover Jr. felt differently. In 2016, Glover was driving along in his Kansas hometown, not breaking any observable traffic rules. Nearby, patrolman Mark Mayer ran a computer check on the license plate of Glover's 1995 Chevy pickup truck. He learned that the owner of that truck had a revoked driver's license. Mayer pulled Glover over. He assumed that the driver was also the owner with the revoked driver's license. Mayer charged Glover with driving as a habitual violator. Glover thought that assumption was not a good enough reason to stop him, so he got a lawyer. He sued for violation of his Fourth Amendment right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. Believe it or not, this traffic matter wound up before the U.S. Supreme Court.
I, Clarence Thomas.
I, Sonia Sotomayor.
I, Stephen Breyer.
I, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I, Brett M. Kavanaugh, do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will administer justice
without respect to persons.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge
the duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
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 Welcome to Legal Docket. I'm Mary Reichard.
And I'm Jenny Ruff. This podcast is from the team that brings you the world and everything in it.
The Honorable, the Chief Justice, and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Come with us inside the world of the Supreme Court as we look more deeply into current disputes and how they make a difference to your life.
All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to...
We've chosen a handful of cases from this past term that we think you will find thought-provoking and worthy of deeper consideration. Today, a routine traffic stop with a possible Fourth Amendment violation.
God save the United States and this honorable court.
Support for the Legal Docket podcast comes from listeners like you. World is grateful for your generosity, which makes possible the journalism that powers this program. WNG.org/donate.
I called up patrolman Mark Mayer to find out what happened that day 4 years ago. On Zoom, I saw a 40-something-year-old man with a shiny bald head and friendly smile lines.
It was the 28th of April, about approximately 7:30 in the morning. So it would have been just shortly after my shift started. We work a 12-hour shift, either 7 in the morning till 7 at night or vice versa.
He described the location the way policemen do. He'd been westbound on 23rd Street approaching 59 Highway in Lawrence, Kansas, in Douglas County.
So that intersection in particular in our jurisdiction is probably one of, if not the busiest intersections as far as traffic patterns, flow of traffic, etc. I was stopped at a red light and I had vehicles all around me. And as I sat in traffic at the red light, I took the opportunity to proactively gather intelligence on the vehicles around me, which would basically include running any visible registration or license plate number of a vehicle that was in view of mine.
Other parts of the country have automated license plate readers, ALPRs, in their patrol cars. Those can run license plate checks by the hundreds from every direction, whether on parked vehicles or moving vehicles. Officer Mayer's situation is different.
Correct, correct. In my case, it would have just been a manual entry. With vehicles around me that potentially could be involved in some sort of violation of the law, again, whether it's just a mere traffic infraction or in this case is a misdemeanor crime to drive on a revoked license. I used that time by entering the license plate numbers and just seeking what information I could from the state database.
He recognized the name on one of the registrations from the database, Charles Glover. Mayer flipped on his lights and pulled over the vehicle.
And so as I approached the window of his vehicle after initiating this traffic stop, Mr. Glover knew me and I knew him, and it was a fairly friendly exchange, if you will. Mr. Glover actually was an individual who I had known previously from my time when I worked in the jail before I came out onto patrol, a repeat offender as far as his driving. And so I was familiar with him as soon as I ran the registration. And then,
as you'll find out, these particular facts had a great deal to do with how the case turned out. Now, I reached out to Charles Glover and many of his relatives. Either I didn't hear back from them, or I got an outright thanks but no thanks from Glover's lawyers.
So we'll set it up as best we can without them. Glover's driving along in his truck, minding his own business. Officer Mayer runs the license plate number for no reason except that he can. He learns that whoever owns the truck has a revoked driver's license.
And this is the problem, according to Glover's lawyer. Sarah Harrington says it's wrong to assume that the person with the revoked license is also the driver of the vehicle. Listen to Harrington during oral argument in November 2019, arguing for Glover and against Kansas.
Kansas and the United States asked this court to adopt a bright-line nationwide rule that it is always reasonable to assume that a car is being driven by its unlicensed owner. They simply assert that it is common sense in every circumstance and in every community in the country. But that's not true, and that's not how the Fourth Amendment works.
Well, how does the Fourth Amendment work? And what's reasonable to assume? Here's what the Fourth Amendment says.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Unreasonable searches, probable cause. Let's break that down a little. I called up a law school classmate of mine who went into criminal law practice after graduation.
I'm Ed Brown, and I've been a criminal defense lawyer in the city of St. Louis for over 30 years.
I asked Brown to explain probable cause, the standard the government must meet before it can search or seize a person or belongings. Brown contrasts probable cause with the reasonable suspicion standard.
The difference between probable cause and reasonable suspicion is that with probable cause, any reasonable person would know that a crime is being committed. Reasonable suspicion, on the other hand, in the words of the Supreme Court, means only something more than an inarticulable hunch. It's got to be more than just a feeling in your belly.
Now let's take a minute here and consider that. Probable cause is language from the Fourth Amendment. Reasonable suspicion is language from a Supreme Court case.
Famous case, Terry versus Ohio, from back in the 60s, where the Supreme Court allowed a search based on only reasonable suspicion. Sometimes a police officer can use his common sense and his training to know that something isn't right and to pursue the matter in question. However, he cannot seize or search things only based upon reasonable suspicion. There has to be some sort of probable cause.
That case, Terry versus Ohio, is where that language of reasonable suspicion came from. Briefly, the facts in that case. A police officer thought John Terry and two other men were just about to commit a robbery, so he stopped and frisked the men. In the process, he found weapons. Terry received a conviction for carrying a concealed weapon. Terry's lawyer argued this was a search and seizure not based on probable cause, in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Listen to part of that oral argument from 1967. Lawyer for the state, Reuben Payne, defended the police officer who stopped and frisked on a hunch. Lawyer Payne is asked, how can there be probable cause if nothing illegal has yet been observed?
I understand that to mean taking into consideration the totality of the circumstances as the responsible person views it at that particular time in relation to his work. For example, the police officer here, taking into totality the circumstances as that he observes, under the conditions which he observes them, that the conduct that existed, the idea that may be flow from the conduct which he has observed here, would establish probable cause.
You understand it means
Justice Thurgood Marshall seemed incredulous about that. He pressed further on Payne. Just where does an officer get expertise to predict someone is about to commit a crime? You'll need to listen carefully to this as his voice is fainter on this recording.
Well, Mr. Payne, in this case, this arresting officer testified, did he not, that he had never seen anybody case a joint?
That is correct.
So where did he get his expertise about somebody about to commit a robbery?
I think that he would get his expertise by virtue of the fact that he had been a member of the police department for 40 years. And by being a member of the police department for 40 years, I'm quite sure that even if by osmosis, some knowledge would have to come to him of the various degrees of crimes.
Now we get intuition by osmosis.
A moment of levity in a very serious case. Not mere intuition, Payne replied. He offered the example of a lawyer who spends time with a police officer over several years. That lawyer would gain knowledge about practical policing, aspects of human behavior, and the law.
Justice Marshall wound up joining the 8-1 majority in favor of the officer. Terry versus Ohio found that the officer had the right to detain someone under certain specified circumstances. The officer had a reasonable suspicion to detain Terry. That's something more than a feeling in the belly, as Lawyer Brown described. Reasonable suspicion is a particularized objective basis for suspecting someone the officer wants to stop, based on totality of circumstances. It allows for the human factor of police experience, background, and training.
But still, Glover says that one fact that got him pulled over, having a revoked license, isn't enough to reach that reasonable suspicion standard. You can't just assume that the owner is the driver. One World Radio listener told us his story.
My dad and I don't share the same name, but I do drive his car, and the car is registered under his name. And I got pulled over maybe 4 or 5 times because there's a warrant out for my dad's arrest, and he's out of state. So that's every time they ran the license, it would show that there's a warrant out for the owner of that car's arrest.
For this driver, an inconvenient and embarrassing situation.
And so they would always ask me if I had something to drink, just because my dad's had a couple of DUIs, and that's the reason there's a warrant out for his arrest. So that's what they would always ask me, and then I would explain the situation. I'm driving the car, but then they would let me go.
So that turned out all right, but was he a public safety hazard?
No.
Did he do something wrong?
No.
Was this a hassle?
Yes.
Multiply that by millions of people who own cars and lots of those people who also have suspended, revoked, expired licenses.
And who have family or friends using their vehicles?
You've got a whole lot of people getting hassled.
Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg cast about for a solution for that assumption problem of assuming the registered owner is also the driver.
But the cause for the suspension can be a number of things that have nothing to do with safety on the roads. It could be I didn't pay my fine. I didn't pay court costs. Doesn't say anything about the driver's ability to drive safely.
That's right, Justice.
And was there a way of finding out why the license was suspended? The technology of it. Was there an easy way to push a button to say, oh, so the registered owner's driver's license has been suspended because...
So it's not in the record, but my understanding is the answer is no. But even if there were...
That assumption of owner equals driver also bothered Justice Elena Kagan. She spun a scenario to test the waters with the Solicitor General, who argued in support of Kansas, and the officer.
Suppose that a municipality has a law that says everybody has to carry their driver's license with them at all times. And suppose that a particular police department actually did a kind of survey or, you know, a study of their practices and found that actually 50% of teenagers do not carry their driver's license with them at all times. All right? So now it's like common sense that if you see a teenager, she won't be carrying her driver's license with her. Does that give the police officer the ability to stop every teenager that he sees?
Generally not, Your Honor. I think
Glover's lawyer, Sarah Harrington, extended Justice Kagan's scenario to argue for her side. Say a rule that police must have some common sense reason to pull someone over. But not only that, the reason must be something the courts can review, like local statistics or the weather at the time. Yet Justice Samuel Alito thought that could easily get out of hand.
Trying to check with headquarters as to the basis for the license suspension, whether it's an urban area or a rural area or someplace in between, whether it's a highway or a city street, whether it's raining, whether it's dark, maybe whether it's a law-abiding community where people who have suspended licenses never drive. The officer has to take into account all of those factors.
No need to go that far, Harrington answered, but still, something more than the single fact of a suspended license. Justice Stephen Breyer tried to get at that something more. Glover had lost his license, that's a fact. The officer would probably say that, in his experience, people who own cars are also likely to be the driver.
You want to add other things. What other things? And if there were other things that were relevant to this, why not call the officer and ask him about them? And if you want to say, no, it's not, that's unreasonable given my fact. Given my fact, you probably didn't say that because actually the statistics show 75%. You know, 60%, but not here, da-da-da. Okay, we're into that. But what is it? What is it that you think is that extra thing in the facts here that should have been in?
I mean, I've listed like 10 things he could have done, and he didn't do any of them.
I didn't say that. I said, what is it? I'm not talking about what he might have done.
Yeah.
I'm saying what?
Justice Sonia Sotomayor was more skeptical of an officer assuming anything. Officers in some other legal cases offered something more tangible.
In most of the others that Justice Gorsuch is talking about, the officer doesn't say, I assume. He says something more, like, this has been my experience, or this is the training, or the statistics that you put into the record in this case are presented to the judge. Why is the Supreme Court better able than the trial court, who's the finder of fact, to make decisions about what common sense teaches?
Common sense doesn't always align with the statistics about other important issues, like privacy. That's what the Electronic Privacy Information Center says, EPIC for short. EPIC is a public interest research group that focuses on privacy and civil liberty in the information age. It filed one of several amici in support of Charles Glover. Megan Iorio is a lawyer there. The information age means more police departments will get ALPRs, the automated license plate readers.
Nearly every police department in large cities uses them. Almost all small cities use them. And studies have shown that most departments that have not already adopted them are looking to do so when they have the funds to do so.
Remember, Officer Mayer did not use an ALPR on the truck Charles Glover was driving. But Iorio's concern is that more people will be stopped based upon a single assumption.
There are several problems with that, and one is that the computer might be wrong. There might be a database error. Another problem is that the ALPR might read the license plate wrong, and this distracts cops from doing the work that we expect them to do when they're on traffic patrol, and what traffic laws are meant to protect against, and that's unsafe driving.
Police overreach is one of her other concerns. That's no what-if scenario either. Iorio goes on with a real-life example.
In Port Arthur, Texas, police used ALPRs to stop people based solely on unpaid traffic tickets. They forced the drivers to either pay on the spot or else haul them off to jail. And in 2 years, they jailed 1,500 people in this town of 55,000. The other issue with this single fact plus ALPR, reasonable suspicion, situation is that ALPRs are most often used, like other surveillance equipment, are most often found in low-income and majority people of color neighborhoods.
So a disparate impact on people who can least afford to pay fines or fees.
It shows how single facts combined with this new technology can sharply change the way that traffic enforcement happens.
But again, that isn't the situation in Kansas. That state mostly only suspends licenses for traffic violations, not failure to pay fines or fees.
Another group that filed an amicus brief is the world's largest organization of sworn law enforcement officers, the Fraternal Order of Police. It supports the stance of Kansas and Officer Mayor. Larry James is general counsel. I asked James about that disparate impact concern on poor or minority populations.
I think the question becomes, you're on the road. The license check does not infer that the officer has a predisposition of either the individual being minority or being poor.
James explained that an unlicensed driver can't get auto insurance, and that, in turn, poses a danger to the public in case of an accident. Yet another reason for police to be able to check license plates randomly.
The question is, when that information is relayed to that officer, does he or she have sufficient information to a reasonable degree of an officer similarly situated to conclude that it's very likely that this individual driving the car is unlicensed or the license have been revoked or suspended, thus the car is uninsured, and that is a crime and it's a danger to the public.
Officer Mayer pointed out another benefit to the status quo, allowing a stop based on random checks.
The very least of what I can do when I'm out there. And of course, it's the very least as far as intrusiveness as well, because I'm not actually stopping vehicles to gather that information.
Still, there's the view of the Fines, Fees, and Justice Center. It filed an amicus brief in support of Glover, along with the Cato Institute, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the R Street Institute. Quite a span of ideological perspectives among that group.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. Lisa Foster is president of the Fines, Fees, and Justice Center. She pointed out how the status quo hurts low-income people the most.
Kansas said, oh, our officers have to be able to stop these people because it's a public safety problem. People with suspended licenses are dangerous drivers. And that is not, in fact, the case.
Instead, Foster told me, other states suspend licenses for all sorts of reasons that have nothing to do with public safety.
They'll suspend a license if the person fails to pay their child support. Many drug offenses carry an automatic license suspension, even if a car had nothing to do with the offense. But the single largest category of suspensions in the United States is when a person cannot afford to pay their fines and fees.
Foster said 42 states now use suspension of driver's licenses to collect debt.
So just to give an example, in Florida, 70% of the licenses suspended annually by the state of Florida are suspended for non-payment of court fines and fees, 70%. In Ohio, it's 62%. In Wisconsin, it's 56%.
But that's not Kansas. According to government documents, only about 10% of licensed drivers in that state are suspended for unpaid fines and fees. Yet Foster pointed out the arbitrary approach of fines and fees is currently used elsewhere.
It's a tempting way of raising money. It's very easy for lawmakers to just sort of blithely add things. I mean, California is a great example. The fees that attach to every traffic ticket, they fund 18 different state agencies, including the Fish and Game Service and the Department of Emergency Management and the medical air transport system. I mean, things that have nothing to do with.
On the other side is Helen Witte. She's president of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, a group that also filed an amicus brief, but in support of Kansas and Officer Mayer. Witte says the problem is a majority of people who've lost their licenses do keep driving.
A license is suspended usually for a big deal. I mean, it's not, I don't think that a license gets suspended for nothing. And unfortunately, a person might have to get to work or have to get their children to school. But also, it does indicate a disregard for the law. Unfortunately for many people, they continue to drive and they continue to drink and drive.
So, views pro and con as to what facts give an officer a reasonable suspicion to make a vehicle stop. How do you think the Supreme Court decided? Justice Samuel Alito put it rather provocatively to Glover's lawyer during oral arguments.
What you are proposing is either a trivial decision or a revolutionary decision. It's a trivial decision if all that's lacking here is a statement, I've been trained that blah, blah, blah. It's a revolutionary decision if in every case involving reasonable suspicion, there has to be a statistical showing or an examination of all of the things that you think are necessary here. Is that not right?
Justice Alito, what we're asking for is that the ordinary Fourth Amendment contextual analysis be required in every case. It doesn't require statistics in every case. It doesn't require any magic words. It just requires something to support the reasonableness of an assumption.
Well, that something didn't turn out the way Harrington argued it should. Rather, the justices were convinced by what Kansas Attorney General Toby Kraus argued.
The Fourth Amendment does not and should not apply differently based upon the age and experience of the officer or the time of day of the Fourth Amendment. The rule that respondents propose would require the officers to let this vehicle go at night because it's impossible to identify. The states have a strong interest in regulating the roadways, and they have a strong law enforcement interest. For example, if there is a report of a child that had been abducted and we were looking for the mother, the officers would be reasonable to rely upon the license plate.
Kraus extended that reasonableness to the officer in this case.
Here, Deputy Mayer relied upon the common sense understanding that a registered owner, given the pervasiveness of automobile use in the United States, was likely to be driving again, warranted additional investigation. It would have been poor police work for Deputy Mayer not to initiate the stop in this case and investigate further to confirm or dispel his suspicion.
And that's how the Supreme Court decided by a vote of 8-1. An investigative traffic stop made after learning a vehicle's registered owner has a revoked license is reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
With a caveat, though, if the officer has other information to negate the inference that it is the owner driving the vehicle, then that stop is not okay. For example, if the registered owner is listed as male and the driver is observed to be female, then the officer wouldn't be reasonable to assume the owner and the driver are the same person.
And the court reiterated that the level of suspicion required is less than what's necessary for probable cause. Quote, it depends on the factual and practical considerations in everyday life on which reasonable and prudent men, not legal technicians, act.
And that's true even when it isn't always the case that the driver isn't the owner. The majority pointed to empirical studies that show drivers with suspended or revoked licenses frequently do continue to drive.
So that, combined with the information from the database and common sense judgment, forms a reasonable suspicion, sufficient to think a specific individual is engaged in certain criminal activity. Officer Mayer was quite relieved by this decision, given that the Kansas Supreme Court below had faulted him for making an assumption.
This word of assumption came up, and the Kansas Supreme Court ran with that and said, well, Deputy Mayer just made an assumption that the registered owner was driving, and an assumption is nothing more than just a wild guess. And you have to have more than a wild guess to seize an individual driving down the roadways.
But the justices reversed and remanded the Kansas Supreme Court's assessment.
And so it was enlightening once this case made its way to the Supreme Court that In particular, Justice Gorsuch, he said, you know, inference, assumption, you know, we're basically playing word games. He said, and in reality, aren't we just saying the same thing? This officer made a decision based off of his collective training and experience. And again, call it an assumption if you want, call it an inference, but it all means the same thing.
Justices Kagan and Ruth Bader Ginsburg concurred. They pointed out different facts would produce a different result. For example, in another jurisdiction where licenses are taken away for reasons other than public safety, like not paying fines and fees.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor was the lone dissent. She worried about demographic profiling. She didn't believe driving on a revoked license necessarily means a disregard for the law. Justice Sotomayor believes this ruling will absolve officers from any responsibility to investigate the identity of the driver when it's feasible to do so.
Larry James, general counsel for the Fraternal Order of Police, summed up the opinion this way.
It was a very limited ruling. It does not give a carte blanche green light for officers to go out and stop individuals when other reasonable investigatory techniques should have been employed or were employed and or ignored. I don't see it have that far-reaching effect. One could take the philosophical position that there should be a reasonable suspicion based on something more than the officer saying this individual is unlicensed or has a license revoked, is the owner of the car, therefore it's probably him or her. Now, what the court says is you still have a reasonable time to stop the individual, ask for the license, or ask for the verification. And that standard or requirement has not changed.
For Officer Mayer, this routine traffic stop was anything but.
The fact that a mere encounter based on a traffic stop and the issuance of a traffic citation would reach all the way to the highest court in our country was really pretty mind-blowing for me.
And he's mindful that his power to detain and investigate is a very serious thing.
And when I was a training officer, you know, I made it very clear to people, you need to make sure that you have lawful authority when you make these contacts. Because if, in fact, you do take someone into custody, you have deprived them of their freedom. And that's something that, you know, you and I and every American values tremendously is the ability to be free of government intrusion without a reason.
Legal Docket is produced by the creative team at World Radio. I'm Mary Reichard.
And I'm Jenny Ruff. We're the hosts each week.
Our script editors are Nick Eicher and J.C. Derrick. Technical engineer is Rich Rozzle, and our producer is Paul Butler. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is legaldocket@wng.org. Send us your questions or comments, and we'll see if we can address those in future episodes or in upcoming segments on the world and everything in it. Again, our email address is legaldocket@wng.org.
While you're at it, can you take a moment and leave a comment about the program wherever you listen to this podcast? Comments and reviews are a great way to get the word out. Thanks for listening.